Thank you very much for this introduction, and welcome to everyone to this online course. I'm going to discuss today about paroxysmal dyskinesia. As you're going to see, paroxysmal dyskinesia is known for many, many years. However, it is increasingly recognized in veterinary medicine. We're going to discuss during this presentation what we call paroxysmal event and where does this paroxysmal dyskinesia sit. We will then move on discussing the different type of paroxysmal dyskinesia known in human and see what do we see in dog. Then we will talk about why these dogs are usually presented to you. You're going to see that a lot of them are usually presented for seizures or seizures-like events, sometimes collapse and over time lameness. We will move on to discuss breed-specific paroxysmal dyskinesia. As you will see, there are a number of breeds that are predisposed to dyskinesia, the most common one, Cavalier King Charles or Border Terrier. And finally, we'll discuss what is a general approach, diagnostic approach to paroxysmal dyskinesia and what do we know about their management. First of all, what is paroxysmal dyskinesia? Where does it sit among all the different neurological disorders? Paroxysmal dyskinesia are paroxysmal events. The term paroxysmal indicates that the sign occurs suddenly against a background of normality. And so just to put them back into clinical context, they sit alongside other neurological paroxysmal events. Some of them you're certainly more familiar, and this includes, for example, epileptic seizures, vestibular attack, narcolepsy, cataplexy. All of them are brain events. Metabolic disorder can sometimes present as a paroxysmal event. And finally, neuromuscular disorder, which typically are paroxysmal events triggered by exercise, which improve with rest. All of them can be fairly challenging to diagnose, as often the animals are normal at presentation and really rely on the owner description. So one of the take-home message is to try to identify the nature of the event. So what are paroxysmal dyskinesia itself? Dyskinesia broadly refers to a movement of the body that is involuntary, which means that the dog has no control over it. However, as we're going to see, one of the cardinal signs of paroxysmal dyskinesia is that while this dog have some form of spasm that can affect all four limbs or sometimes one limb and then another one, the animal remains fully aware of his surrounding during the event. And that will be one of the ways to try to differentiate paroxysmal dyskinesia from, for example, a generalized tonicoclonic seizures, where the event will affect all four limbs, but the animal will have no awareness. The term hyperkinetic refers to an excessive abnormal or normal movement or combination of both. That's what we mean by hyperkinetic. So it's, in summary, an involuntary movement in hyper. Now, going back to other paroxysmal event, neurological event, narcolepsy cataplexy will be characterized by involuntary movement in hypo. The animal lose total extensor tone and will collapse on the floor. As I say, one of the important recognizing signs of paroxysmal dyskinesia is the fact that the animal remains fully aware of his surrounding. He is not showing any autonomic sign that you may have with seizures, for example, salivation, urination, defecation. In terms of frequency, they are typically coming out of the blue. Sometimes they can be triggered by excitement or stress, but usually out of the blue. They may last for a few seconds, or they can last sometimes far longer than you will expect for an epileptic seizures, up to a couple of hours, which you will never have with an epileptic fit. So if you have an event that the owner described, and the event itself, like last, for example, half an hour, then that will not be really consistent with an epileptic fit, and I will think more along the line of a paroxysmal dyskinesia. In terms of EEG recording, compared to an epileptic fit, the paroxysmal dyskinesia will have a totally normal enterorectal EEG recording. So, why the animal are usually presented? Most of the animal presented with paroxysmal dyskinesia to me are usually presented for seizures. Now, I'm going to show you what is a typical generalized tonico-clonic seizures. We're going to see from there how paroxysmal dyskinesia differs. So, generalized tonico-clonic seizures, most common form of epileptic fit in dog, maybe less common in cat, where they tend to have more partial seizures. But one of the characteristics is that they occur out of the blue, when no one is expecting. The animal suddenly collapse, as we're going to see, lose awareness, even if the eye open, foam from the mouth very often, there is over-autonomic sign, urination, defecation, violent movement, motor activity of the limb, tonic-clonic movement, as well as chomping of the jaw. So let's look at this video. And that will be a textbook generalized tonico-clonic seizures. Typically, last anywhere from a few seconds to up to a couple of minutes, following which the animal may have a postictal phase that could last, again, a few minutes to a few hours. But it is a paroxysmal event in a sense that it has a sudden onset, sudden offset. Now, how does a paroxysmal dyskinesia differ from that? Before I move on to show you a video of paroxysmal dyskinesia, what's happened in cat? Cat can also have paroxysmal dyskinesia, but they are also more prone to get partial seizures compared to dog, where in dog, the generalized tonico-clonic seizures is more common. So a partial seizures only affect part of the cortex of the brain, and the physical manifestation typically are opposite to where the epileptic foci is in the brain. In cat, very often, twitching of one side of the face, it could be affecting one side of the body and limb. Very often, there may be salivation. And a lot of these cats will have abnormal awareness. And that's why we use the term often in cat to describe these epileptic seizures as psychomotor seizures or complex partial seizures. An example here. You can see this cat, he's got dilated pupil, twitching off the face on the right side, lifting the limb. This cat is unaware of his surrounding and he's got autonomic sign. So only the presence of autonomic sign there tell me we're not dealing with paroxysmal dyskinesia, and also the lack of awareness, which I appreciate is not easy to appreciate, to evaluate on a video. So, what paroxysmal dyskinesia look like? One example showing you there is a young Cavalier King Charles. And this dog was having lifting of the limb, like some form of cramp or spasm of the limb, while remaining totally aware of his surrounding. As you're going to see there, the dog is trying to walk. It happened all of a sudden, the dog was perfectly normal 1 minute, next minute he was doing that. Lifting one of the right back leg. The owner often use the term having cramp or spasm. And then you're going to see that it progressed to affect also the front, and the dog will start lifting the front limb as well. So they may be presented for fit. The owner may use the term fit. They may use the term lameness. And, you know, you examine the dog looks perfectly normal. Hence, why it's so important to try to get a video of this event. Another example of a dog that was presented with lameness or cramp. This dog outside, all of a sudden, for a few minutes, was doing that with his limb, having spasm of one of the back leg. But if you look carefully, the left back leg doesn't look fully normal either. Another example of a dog that this time was not presented for lameness, but more for seizures. And having seen earlier a typical generalized tonicoclonic seizures, you can see how different this look like. But remember that unless you get a video, what the owner will tell you is my dog is having fit. So this dog, totally aware of his surrounding, lifting the left front leg. He has no control over that, no autonomic signs. Then he's going to go on the floor, and now he's starting to lift the left back leg. And at the same time, he's going to lift also one of his back leg, now the right. So this clearly show involuntary motor activity affecting both sides of the body, both front limb, while the animal is totally aware of his surrounding. And he cannot be an epileptic fit, because that would be an epileptic fit, it would mean that both side of the cortex are activated, and you will not expect the animal to be aware of his surrounding if both sides of the brain were having this electrical storm typical of an epileptic fit. The other thing is that an epileptic fit lasts no more than a couple of minutes, unless obviously you get status epilepticus. While this event will last far longer, and we're already at 1 minute 30. I'm not going to play the whole video, but it lasted 6 minutes. If the owner describe an event and the event itself lasting very long, more than 5 minutes, start to think maybe we're not dealing with an epileptic fit. Video six there to show you what's happening in cat. Again, same thing. This cat was presented for lameness, and you can see that he's starting to lift his right back leg. And they all pretty much look the same. They have this involuntary flexion or extension of the limb, typically flex the hip and the stifle, and typically flex the elbow and extend the forearm while remaining totally aware of your surrounding. And in addition to that, a lot of these animals will have also twisting of their spine during the event. And you can see there, this cat is totally aware of his surrounding, is unable to walk, is having this, mixture of involuntary flexion, extension of the front limb, but totally aware, which again doesn't fit with an epileptic fit. And if it was a partial seizure, you will expect to only affect one side, while clearly is affecting, both sides of his body. So that's to show you more as a little joke what the way I tend to remember this cat and dog. They're very much this cat there that you find in a lot of Chinese shop. That's a reminder of paroxysmal dyskinesia in cats. So, with regard to what do we know in human, paroxysmal dyskinesia is something very well described in human, but in terms of pathophysiology and treatment, there is very little that is known. In human, paroxysmal dyskinesia is primarily classified by trigger, then duration, whether or not it's less or more than 5 minutes, and then presumed etiology as familial or sporadic versus secondary. And as you can see, there are different type of movement disorder. One of them is paroxysmal kinesigenic dyskinesia, PKD. The next one is paroxysmal non-kinesigenic dyskinesia, while PED stands for paroxysmal exercise-induced dyskinesia, which is usually triggered by fatigue. And PHD is paroxysmal hypnogenic dyskinesia, which are triggered by sleep. The two most common are the first two. So PKD, or paroxysmal kinesigenic dyskinesia, is usually triggered by sudden movement. It has a typical duration of less than 2 minutes and a very high frequency per day. And these respond to anti-epileptic drug. Now, it is very rare in dog. In dog, we tend to get much more what is the equivalent in human of PNKD, or paroxysmal non-kinesigenic dyskinesia, which means they are not triggered by by movement. They last more than 5 minutes, even if in dog they can last less than that. And the frequency is very erratic, from a few per day to none for many months. And that's what I would discuss in a minute with you. Typically, in dog, they tend to have a lot for a short period of time, one or more than one a day for a few consecutive days or weeks, and then interspace with long period of many weeks or many months with nothing. In human, this PNKD is triggered by alcohol, fatigue, caffeine, or excitement. In dog, only a few will be triggered by stress or excitement. Most of the time, there is no trigger. But more importantly, and this is one of the features also in dog, they typically do not respond to anti-epileptic drugs. So some of these dogs I tend to see as a referral for refractory epilepsy. The dog is reported to have seizures, the referring vet put the dog on anti-epileptic drug, and there is no change in the frequency. My first question is, are we treating the right condition? Hence why I routinely ask for a video footage of the event, because it's a common mistake to jump to conclusion based on any other description and wrongly diagnose an epileptic seizures when actually we're dealing with paroxysmal dyskinesia, which typically doesn't respond to anti-epileptic drug. So what do we know about paroxysmal dyskinesia in dog? As I say, they look very similar in terms of their characteristic to PNKD, or paroxysmal non-kinesiogenic dyskinesia in human. They are certainly been known for many years in certain breeds, but not given the name paroxysmal dyskinesia, which is the general terminology under which this kind of condition come into. In terms of pathophysiology, apart from a handful of breed, we know very little about them. We know it's a brain event, but what is the mechanism is still remain unsure, despite a lot of hypotheses about basal ganglia disorder or channelopathy. The fact of the matter is, apart from a very few number of breeds, it has never been proven. They are can be sporadic or familial inherited. We'll come back to that. And one of the interesting things is that they've been known for many years in certain breed, and depending on the breed, they've been given specific name. Most commonly, you will find in Cavalier King Charles the term of episodic falling or collapsing cavalier. In Border Terrier, the term of canine epileptoid cramping syndrome or spike disease. In Labrador Retriever, Labrador dyskinesia. Or in Scottish Terrier, Scotty cramp. But the fact of the matter is, they are all paroxysmal dyskinesia. And very often, you know, the complex name they've been given in certain breed only hide the fact of the matter is how little we know about this condition. And it's easy to give them a complex name, terminology that nobody can pronounce, but they only reflect that people know or knew, at least until recently, very little about that. So, a few years, and when I say a few years, I mean we're looking in the early 2000s, I started looking into that, and especially the first breed I started to look at was episodic falling in Cavalier King Charles. So, just to show you a video, and to reinforce all the things we discussed about what they look like, here is an example of a young Cavalier King Charles, and you can see that suddenly collapse while remaining totally aware of his surrounding. Unable to stand or move as his limbs are going into spasm. There is no autonomic sign, again, on this dog. So all the characteristics of paroxysmal dyskinesia. So as I told you, very little was known in that breed. It was even described 30 to 40 years ago. There was an article in the Vet Record stating that, you know, the hypothesis that we were dealing with a muscle disease. It transpired that the publication that shows some muscle changes on histology only reflected some abnormal processing of the muscle sample, freezing artifact, in fact. So it's definitely not a muscle disease, but I wanted to find out what is the cause of that. So we started doing a study looking at a large group of Cavalier King Charles to try to define a little bit more this condition. It is something, a condition that most of Cavalier King Charles that are affected will start to show sign when they are immature, from 3 to 4 months of age, very rarely young adult dog. It is usually triggered by stress or excitement. Like for any paroxysmal dyskinesia, it may last a few seconds, but can sometimes last longer than an epileptic fit, characterized by hypertonicity, either hyperflexion or hyperextension. Animal remain totally aware of its surrounding with no autonomic sign. But we wanted to look at any DNA abnormality on this dog, and we were very lucky that with a small number of cohort of dogs, 7 affected dogs, we managed to identify the underlying gene responsible for that condition. And this publication there, if you're interested in reading it, the candidate gene analysis identified a macrodeletion affecting the Brivican gene, or BCAN, which encodes for the brain-specific extracellular matrix proteoglycan Brivican, which is an important a component in the brain that is especially involved in neurotransmission when the dog is under situation of stress or excitement. So in Cavalier King Charles, there is actually a genetic test that you can do to diagnose the condition. But also, the other thing that I focused on at the time was the treatment. Initially, we tried what was used in human, most commonly clonazepam, which is a benzodiazepine, which Cavalier King Charles seems to respond very well. However, the problem with benzodiazepine in dog is that they develop rapidly functional tolerance, which means that if you keep giving it, the body gets used to that and the effect lessens, which means that you may have to increase the number of the quantity of tablets, which, you know, make the side effect worse. Now, following that, because obviously we're losing control, we try the next drug that is used in human, which is acetazolamide or Diamox, and we really strike lucky with that drug because affected dogs respond completely to acetazolamide and they do not develop functional tolerance. Only a handful of dogs will, you know, need additional medication, and in that case we may use phenobarbital or, you know, clonazepam when they are in crisis. The only thing to remember is that it's a lifelong treatment. This dog has genetic abnormality, so the drug is only symptomatic, it's not going to cure them. The second breed that we'll focus on after evaluating the Cavalier King Charles was another breed that we commonly see with paroxysmal dyskinesia, which is the Border Terrier. And in Border Terrier, this condition was given the name canine epileptoid cramping syndrome, and that is again a misnomer, because until our study, most vets, including neurologists, were under the impression that they dealt with partial seizures, hence the term epileptoid cramping. And as you're going to see, this has nothing to do with an epileptic fit. So the first study we did was this phenotypic characterization in Border Terrier, published 3 years ago in GSAP. And while we're going to play the video, you're going to see again similar characteristic as we've described. They look again very similar to all the other paroxysmal dyskinesia, with this cramping of the limb while the animal remains fully aware. The only two differences was that they tend to have, a lot of them, mild tremor of the head and borborygmia. A lot of dogs have this gut sound while having this paroxysmal dyskinesia. The age at onset compared to Cavalier King Charles could be anywhere from a couple of months to, you know, adult age, so not a disease of the young, and the duration, similar, can last a few seconds to up to 2 hours. When we did have this phenotypic study, we also asked Connor about any trial with anti-epileptic drug, and none of them responded to phenobarb or bromide or Keppra. But one thing that was striking is that a lot of pet owners were giving us some impression that there may be a link with the diet, especially gluten-free diet. So we started to look into that, What we did to start with is what is known in human, if there's any link with diet and some form of paroxysmal dyskinesia. And we find this study there, published in Movement Disorder 10 years ago, that show in a small number of humans a link between celiac disease, which is gluten sensitivity, and paroxysmal non-kinesigenic dystonia. So that prompted us to look in that breed where there may be a link into marker of gluten sensitivity. And marker of gluten sensitivity in dog are primarily two antibody, anti-transglutaminase 2 and anti-gliadin. Now, gluten is a protein that you find in most diet, which has the potential antigenic stimulus for other conditions that could be sometimes neurological or not. The most common presentation is what is known as celiac disease, which is the GI manifestation of gluten sensitivity. But gluten could also have neurological manifestation, which may occur at the same time as the gut manifestation, celiac. But also, you may have gluten sensitivity with neurologic manifestation without any gut manifestation. So what we did in that study, published in JVIM last year, we basically took a cohort of Border Terrier with video sign of paroxysmal dyskinesia, which we review. They needed to be not on any gluten-free diet. We measure these antibodies for gluten, then put them on a gluten-free diet with strict instruction that the dog should not receive anything else than gluten-free. And 3 months later, we ask the owner to report about the frequency of the event, and we measure the antibody again. And as you can see, both antibodies dramatically decrease within 3 months, returning to normal value. But strikingly, the owner report an abolition or a marked reduction in the frequency of the paroxysmal dyskinesia. And that prompted us to make the link in Border Terrier, which we have not established in any other breed, between gluten sensitivity and this paroxysmal dyskinesia. And we've suggested that this condition in Border Terrier should be named gluten-responsive paroxysmal dyskinesia. But I need to stress, we've looked at the link in other commonly affected breeds, as we're going to see Labrador, and also Jack Russell Terrier or Yorkshire Terrier, there is no link with other breeds between gluten sensitivity and paroxysmal dyskinesia. The other breed that we've been focusing on is other commonly affected breeds, which are Labrador Retriever and Jack Russell Terrier. And as you're going to see, a good example here of Jack Russell Terrier showing now signs that you should be very familiar, having seen so many videos during this presentation. The dog is fully aware of his surrounding, having cramping of the limb, no autonomic signs. So maybe we see a lot of them because, like Border Terrier, of the popularity of this breed, at least in the United Kingdom. Let's look at the Labrador Retriever. Similar things, you can see that this dog, totally aware of his surrounding, having cramping affecting all four limbs, while the dog is fully aware of his surrounding. So what we wanted to do in this dog is to see, first of all, if there's a link with diet. So we measured the antibodies for gluten, and there was no link whatsoever. We also check if there was the mutation that we find in Cavalier King Charles, because frankly, they look the same on the video. So you will imagine maybe he's got the same mutation. Unfortunately, they didn't have the mutation we've identified in Cavalier King Charles. But we wanted also to see what's happened to this dog if you don't treat them. Because in human, there is no magic drug. We try acetazolamide, didn't seem to make any difference. Clonazepam didn't make any difference. We know from experience phenobarb didn't make any difference. So we wanted to see if you give nothing, what's happened, on the basis that if someone wants to try a drug, they got something to compare with. And we did that in both this breed. What we find in both Labrador and Jack Russell Terrier, first of all, most of them tend to start at a young adult at the onset. A lot of them tend to be triggered by startle or sudden movement. There was a male bias in these breeds. One third tend to have cluster episode, which means we call cluster more than a week. And the natural history is self-limiting, with just under a third entering remission and improvement in 75% of these dogs. So if you give nothing, this is the pattern they tend to have. They tend to have a few episodes, or quite a lot, in a short period of time, interspersed with long period with nothing. And with, as they grow, as they age, as I say, three quarter will improve and a third will enter spontaneous remission, usually within 4 to 5 years. Now, this is very important because when the dog will be presented to the vet, usually when he's having episode. And therefore, if you start giving a drug, you may wrongly think they are improving if they are going through this phase after the crisis. So very important, before you start a drug, as an advice, try to get an observation period of at least 2 to 3 months to see what is the natural pattern before you try any drug. So then you can more objectively compare with and without before to draw any conclusion of a drug working or not working. So all the video I've shown you so far are the most common presentation of paroxysmal dyskinesia, which is the equivalent in human of the non-kinesigenic. Non-kinesigenic meaning not triggered by exercise or movement. It was reported a few years ago in German Journal of Small Animal Practice, a German short hair pointer that had movement disorder, again, episodic paroxysmal dyskinesia, triggered by sudden movement, that were most often triggered by startling or prolonged exercise, and like in human, PKD tend to have a very high frequency and respond to anti-epileptic drug. And the video that you're going to see here is that dog reported in Journal of Small Animal Practice. You can see this dog having this episodic cramping affecting all four legs. The dog is unable to really move. It happened during exercise. And this dog responded initially very well to phenobarbitone. There is no long-term follow-up, as far as I can remember. But I wanted to show you, I was lucky to see a similar dog. Actually, the one I just showed you was mine. The one in Journal of Small Animal Practice is this one, which during exercise was doing similar things. This cramping affecting all four limbs, giving this very odd gait there, which, you know, it's not ataxia, it's just the dog having cramping in his limb. So that the one published, the previous one was mine. And similar to this one, mine responding very well to phenobarbitone. Unfortunately, after 2.5 years, the dog start responding to phenobarbitone. The owner tried bromide, which for a while helped the dog, but then the dog relapsed and the owner, unfortunately, decided to put the dog down. So there must be something in German Shorthair pointer dog, two, you know, dog like that being affected. And again, different from the other dyskinesia, this one is triggered by exercise and respond to anti-epileptic drug, namely phenobarbitone. So how do you manage if you got a dog presented with that? Again, I can't emphasize more the importance of getting a video to try to differentiate from an epileptic fit or over paroxysmal event. As I explained to you, the pathophysiology, apart from, you know, the few breeds I've discussed, is unknown. There is hypothesis that it is a functional disorder, hence the term often used of primary paroxysmal dyskinesia. Maybe a basal nuclear disorder, maybe a channelopathy. Again, they are only hypothesis. But very rarely, dyskinesia can be secondary to a brain disease. However, it is the exception as opposed to the rule. So it is still a matter of debate whether or not you should MRI this dog. I will say that it depends very much on the breed. If it is a well-known breed, Border Terrier, Cavalier, King Charles, where actually you got a gene, then I will not personally do an MRI unless they're showing neurological sign. If it's a more unusual breed or in cat, I will tend to do MRI to rule out a structural disease. If it is a cavalier-king Charles, as I say, you got a genetic test. There is also a genetic test for, if I remember, with Chinook, which is a breed more common in North America. If you got a Border Terrier, then the workup I will do is to measure gluten antibodies, pending that the dog is not on any gluten-free diet. But also, I will repeat the antibodies 2 to 3 months later, and making sure the dog is only receiving gluten-free diet, no treat, as a lot of them will contain gluten, as the antibodies will be also a way to monitor compliance. And we had owner telling us, yes, we put a dog on gluten-free diet, the dog is no better, we do the antibodies, they are still above the normal range. And then, quizzing a bit more the owner, we find out that sometimes someone in the family give treat, and they didn't know that they should be gluten-free. Or we have also example of dog eating horse poo, which contain grain, and grain contain gluten, which was the reason why they didn't respond. What other differential to consider? Well, we've seen dogs that are sometimes presented with lameness. So if the video suggests only the pelvic limb or only the front limb, very important to do a thorough orthopedic exam to look for other cause of lameness. And also consider if the orthopedic exam is normal and did the dog appear painful, other more common cause of intermittent lameness, as an example here, foraminal stenosis, which can be due to lumbosacral degenerative disease, or for example, lateralized disc. As an example here, you can see this was a Cocker Spaniel having nerve root signature that looked very similar to cramping, but only affecting one limb with very lateralized disc, compressing this spinal nerve there and causing intermittent lameness and nerve root signature. So one of you was asking, are these dogs in pain? Were they cramping? Well, there must be in some discomfort because, if you do a little bit of exercise and feel very unfit, you may have cramp, and this is so, but not to the extent of the dog vocalizing, like you will have, for example, with a nerve root signature due, for example, to lateralized disc. The other differential to consider is obviously partial epileptic seizures. Again, with partial epileptic seizures, the awareness may or may not be affected, especially in cats with complex partial seizures, but they really only affect one side of the body. While on this dog, you can see that they are fully aware, and a lot of them will affect all four limbs. Moral of the story, the take-home message, make sure you get a video footage because they are the best thing to try to identify it. And sometimes it's not clear-cut, I agree, but it's better than owner trying desperately to describe it to you. Drug-wise, well, again, it depends very much on the breed. Cavalier-King Charles, the easiest one because you can diagnose with a genetic test. And you can treat them with acetazolamide dosage written there. Important when you do that to monitor the electrolyte. As you know, we could very rarely cause electrolyte abnormality. I would do it probably on a monthly basis, monitor them. If it's a Border Terrier, the management would be gluten-free diet and repeat the antibodies 3 months later to check if they have gone down and in parallel with the resolution or mark improvement in the frequency of the event. If it's the equivalent of what we've seen in German Shorthair Pointer or this exercise-induced dyskinesia or PKD, then they tend to respond very well to phenobarbital, but the long-term prospect may not be great as I feel that obviously we only have one, they may escape treatment. What about all the others? Well, I have to say that for a lot of the others, we don't tend to give any drug on the basis that the events are not life-threatening compared to an epileptic fit. The frequency is very erratic. We know in commonly affected breed, Labrador and Jack Russell Terrier, they may have long period of time of weeks, of months with nothing, and they tend to enter remission or mark improvement in 3/4 of dog. So when do I usually treat if it's really affecting the quality of life? And that's a judgment call. I would say more than 1 a week for at least an observation period of 3 months. Then I will try medication and I will try them in that order, starting with acetazolamide, then clonazepam and so on. but you need to give the drug for a period long enough to help you to appreciate if there is a therapeutic response. Hence why I suggested for this dog to have an observation period of 3 months without drug before considering putting them through that. And that's another thing to highlight is that Olfu is exceptional to find a structural cause on MRI, which prompts us not to really jump to do MRI on this dog because it's likely to be normal. Sometimes investigating is a way as well not only to confirm there is no structural cause, but to put the owner under trust because it is very stressful. It gives a lot of anxiety to pet owner to see that dog doing that. And knowing, having the reassurance there is no structural disease can sometimes remove a lot of anxiety and be more prepared to just monitor and observe as opposed to jump to treatment. And, you know, unfortunately, despite this list of drug, it's very much hit and miss, and more often miss than hit in terms of treatment response. So I hope that this presentation on paroxysmal dyskinesia have given you a better idea of this emerging condition, even if it's been known again for many decades, and you understand a little bit better what we know so far and what we don't know and how to manage the next case that will come through your door. I will finish by thanking you again for your attention. If you have not joined us yet on Facebook, I will invite you to join Simon Platt and I on Veterinary Neurology Facebook page, totally free, where you will find a lot of cool tips, cool video, recent article published, and join our Facebook community, which now count more than 10,000 followers. Thank you very much for your attention, and I'll be happy to take any question you may have. So there's a question about how to differentiate for partial seizures versus dyskinesia. Again, with most of the paroxysmal dyskinesia, if you look at the video, you will see that all four limbs are affected. And that's why the animal will be often be collapsed, because he cannot initiate voluntary movement. He's having cramp, hypertonicity. And that is the main thing to differentiate. The other thing is that a partial seizures, like any epileptic seizures, will not last more than a couple of minutes. Also, when you ask the owner how long it lasts, remember that for them, it is from the beginning to the end of the event. What I'm focusing is the event itself, which is while the animal is collapsed or having this twitching or having this spasm. Partial seizures will last less than a minute or less than 2 minutes, while most paroxysmal dyskinesia will last far longer. Yes, potentially, you could, as you suggest, try them on anti-epileptic drug and see if you got a therapeutic response. Again, before to do that, you need to have a good idea what is the frequency, because without knowing the frequency, how do you know you're having, you're doing any good? But that would be potentially, if you got a doubt, you could do that. I will also encourage, if you are debating if it's partial epileptic seizures versus dyskinesia, to work up these dogs on the basis that maybe you're more likely to find a structural cause with partial seizures than with generalized tonicoclonic seizures. I don't think there are any other questions. So I will finish to again thank you very much for your attention and hope to see you soon. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
On behalf of Webinar Club, I'd like to thank Laurent for an excellent presentation today. The recording and the certificate for this webinar will be available in the next few days in the members area of Webinar Club. Thank you all for attending. That's the end of the webinar.